With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey kids, Jesse Katz coming at you from the Chord Club today for Billboard's Soul Sisters podcast, where I am still manning the mics alone while Dara is on tour. But honestly, today's guest could host this one herself. She has played a radio host, in fact, and pretty much every other kind of wacky character you can imagine, including Celine Dion, which she tells us a lot about, which was amazing, unprompted. She's also a singer in real life, which should come as no surprise considering some of her most famous sketches. But it's a side of her that a lot of us don't really know, even after seeing her in our living rooms every Saturday night for years. Okay, enough teasing. Let's get to today's episode with the very talented, very funny, and very musical Anna Gasteyer.
Hi, this is Anna Gasteyer.
And I'm Jesse Katz.
And you're listening to Soul Sisters for Billboard. Yeah. It was almost too animated.
It was. I feel good about it.
Good.
Thank you for indulging me.
A minor shout out.
Uh-huh.
To a little NPR joy.
Exactly. Are you an NPR listener?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. That's, I mean, everything I've parodied, I'd love.
Right.
I just do it
That's
so I could
the best place
say.
To come from, right?
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, yeah. Maybe with the grand exception of Celine Dion. I love her voice. I mean, I have to say, like, since I started, when I really started, like, properly training and working, like when I sang Elphaba and Wicked when I worked on Broadway, like she is a crazy open belter. Her actual tone is nuts, but she's, I cannot stand her music and find it amusing that other people like it.
You never had a moment with
never
any,
you know,
of her hits?
And it's such a mean thing to say. I don't mean it.
Vocally, personally,
like I say, like vocally, she's bananas. Like I think I would, you know, I think it's just, I think honestly, a lot of it is coming from, the translation issue with her from when I started parodying her, because I'm not sure that she's, when I was in, so I went to music school for a year and then I fled and went into, I fell down this like comedy rabbit hole because I went to school in Chicago and da-da-da-da.
Which we're going to get totally into.
And, but I was, you know, in proper, I went to like voice as a voice major and, you know, they teach you, one of the weird things when you're like in this opera track is they make you take all of the foreign languages, but you have to take them completely phonetically. So you don't actually learn Italian, but you learn the phonetic alphabet so you can read Italian and pronounce it properly.
They don't even
bother to like explain the roots or anything. Right. It's literally like this, it's pronunciation class. And you do it in German and Italian and French.
That's like how a lot of people learn Hebrew.
Correct.
So they can read it, but they have no idea what they're saying.
Right. Yeah. And so Celine Dion, you know, sang that way for a long time. And she truly, like, I met her because I went to Madison Square Garden. She was so gracious, like, had me on.
Really? When you were on SNL?
When I was portraying her, she...
So she had a sense of humor about it.
I'm not sure she did. I don't think she spoke English. In fact, I know that she didn't because she... It's like a famous story that I've told before, but like...
Tell it again.
She had me on... They had... The team... Team Celine had me come to Madison Square Garden. Like, there's so many things that happened when I was on SNL that are so like... out of body that I I didn't really process until I'm telling the story later. Then I'm like, it's like Zelig or something. Like, it doesn't really, it didn't really happen to me, you know? But anyway, so she had me come. It was just me and Mark Lipus, the publicist for SNL. And, you know, it's Madison Square Garden and it's packed. Because the thing is, we did that sketch at like the moment in time when that Titanic song was everywhere.
Oh my God.
And I guess songs are still doing that, but I feel like I Will Always Love You had that moment, and the yep. Whitney version, and yep. you know, like there were these moments where you're like, I cannot escape this ballad.
Yes.
Like, and so that pan flute, you know, My Heart Will Go On song, which again is just like sung so unbelievably soaringly, but again, like just that weird, like, my heart will go on, like, just like I'm reading these words, I don't know what they mean, but I know there's a vowel and I'm going to sound good on this vowel, you know? So anyway, so I they had me come and they did this, what we call in the comedy world, a sneaker upper, where they had me enter and then her like catch me from behind on her elevated secret elevator that was coming in behind me. Uh-huh. So I was dressed completely like her. I was in a crazy, it was like a, she, the costume was a lady tux, which I still want to emulate in my own life. It was a one
yeah, those
piece,
are very in now.
I know, it was a one piece lady tux with a breakaway skirt.
Whoa.
Girl.
Oh,
so
man.
She, like, when she got funky, the skirt came off. Right? So so I had this, and they had me dressed exactly like her, but like six sizes bigger because she's tiny.
Yeah.
And I was wearing her funky, and all I remember is that the cummerbund went from your pubic bone to just below your ribs. Like, it was like a massive lady cummerbund.
Yeah.
And so I came out, you know, and everybody amazingly like knew the impression, and then she caught me, and I think I started singing, and I did like a lot of like sacre bleu, you know, whatever, and ran away. And then afterwards, she, you know, because the whole time she was, when she addressed me, she would just look at Renee, her late husband, and he would, and manager, and uh-huh. he would do the talking and she would look at him, because she didn't speak English at all.
Wow. I had so, no idea.
I mean, she may by now, I'm sure she does, but yeah. it was, you know, 15 years ago,
right.
but it was like, it was really like a non-English speaker. And then at the very end, she goes, it is so funny because your voice is so audible to ear.
Oh my God.
So I think she thought,
like, likewise, sister.
Yeah. Like, she thought the, exactly.
And you don't understand the words. Yeah. Wow.
That's yeah, but so she funny. She thought the bit was that I was a bad singer.
Right.
Which was fantastic, because the whole bit was that she was a narcissist anyway. I mean,
yeah,
I, you know, that
totally,
like,
totally. Yeah.
So anyway, whatever.
God, that's so great.
It was fantastic.
So when you were doing all these musical kind of characters on SNL, was that yeah. born out of them knowing that you had this whole music background and wanting to make the most of it?
No, it's straight up me. Like,
yeah.
I mean, would any person in sketch comedy, I mean, because we wrote our own material for the most part.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're so desperate to just grab from whatever your personal toolkit
yeah.
is, as many, you know, moves as you possibly can, because it just decorates this show better. I mean, the work for
right.
sure. Yeah, for
okay.
sure. And I think I just used it. I didn't think of myself really as a singer, because when I left Voice, like uh-huh. I really, you know, again, like I was a my parents wanted me to be a classical singer. So it was like, I secretly longed to, you know, do anything but classical music,
of
but
course.
I didn't really know how to do that. So I left, and then I just sort of used it as funny.
Yeah. All right. So let's rewind then back to those days. Were
yeah.
your parents musicians? Is that why they wanted that for you?
Yeah, they were, you know, my mother actually was a legit singer, and she got a scholarship to Eastman School of Music to be an operatic singer. She
wow.
has terrible stage fright, and she's actually a fine artist, so she didn't go.
Okay.
I think so they probably had, and there's a lot of singers in the family, so there was like a lot of aspiration placed on me, I would say.
Uh-huh.
But I was mostly a violinist. That's what I did for years and years and years.
Okay.
Against
how did the violin happen?
I don't know.
It was stuck in your hands
yeah,
at a young age.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well put. And then, you know, and then just a lot of like, well, they say you have good tone. You know, so I hated it. But
uh-huh.
I do think that violin singularly is great for singers. I think
yeah.
it tunes your ear really well. And again, like I've kind of revisited things all under the lovely veneer of wine as I've gotten older. And it's funny. I mean, it's a little sad theme, but I... because my show is so boozy, but the violin, a couple years ago, I was working on this television show Suburgatory out in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I love violin shtick. I think it's, there's a lot of sort of vaudevillian, you know, old school in my show. And, because as a performer, I think I'm just drawn to fun music and fun, ridiculous songs. I call it Ridiculous Jazz, my album, because it's buoyant and it's amusing and it's lyrically driven and it's improvisational. It's fun, right?
Yeah.
And
you feel like everyone should be kind of buzzed in the room.
Yeah, like in my perfect world, like I would love it if people would be dancing and drinking while I sing.
Exactly.
I mean, I was born in the wrong era. I wish people would dress up and come in their party clothes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we did this video for the Mint Julep song that I did, and Yorma Taconi from The Lonely Island directed it. But we like everybody came and wore their party clothes. And I was like, this is it. This is like what I actually wish I could do all the time. But
yeah,
nobody does that anymore. So, I had been really curious about trying to integrate the violin, but I only have sort of the voice, like this very sort of strict, earnest, you know, tortoiseshell glasses wearing, you know, right. But there's a great American comedy history around terrible violin playing, you know.
Yeah.
Jack Benny and Henny Youngman and all, you know, all these great, like great, great, great old shticky comics, and really, really funny. And so I think I was just sort of continuing to be drawn to that. And I was in LA doing Suburgatory, and I was not able to get back because of a bunch of the winter storms and Sandy. There were like three in a row. And I go a little crazy when I'm in LA and I'm not working, because my children are here, and so it's one thing to be there and working. So my friend who houses me finds the violin amusing, and he goes off to work every day, and he was like, why don't you go get a violin? So I did. I drove to a place and I rented a violin, and then he had to work late a bunch of nights, and so I was just
practicing
like for 12 hours a day, like for the first time out of 15 years or something, 20 years.
You know? Almost sounds like a nervous breakdown.
A little bit, except then like I swear to God, this is where the booze comes in. But I would go down to Trader Joe's, and I would get Mama a nice bottle of Chard, and I would crack open the bottle of Chard, and I would start to fiddle, and it was so unbelievably fun. It was like something broke free inside of me.
Yeah.
And I know it was probably just the wine, but it was this like amazing, like I just started to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And then I pronounced, then I took some lessons with a legit, there's this amazing woman, Megan Gould. She plays with all these Aramaic bands, and she's like an incredible improvisational bluegrass, all of it.
Out there in LA?
No, she's here in New York. And my guitar player, Rich Fairden, was like, you should work with her, because she will like unhinge you from your anal retentive, like childhood violin, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what her whole bag is like improvisation and, you know, playing jazz violin basically, which I'm terrible at, but it is so fun to just integrate it the tiniest bit.
Yeah. And do you play it on the album?
I don't play on the album, but okay. I play live.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, mostly the gag is how terrible I am, because it's a great way to get away with not practicing. But it's so fun, and so I went on this kick, you know, and I was practicing all the time, and you know,
that's
playing
awesome.
When I Grow Too Old to Dream, like all these old like Nat King Cole songs, whatever. And
you reclaimed it.
I reclaimed it, and then I announced to my family that we were going to go to swing dance and like country western swing camp, and you've never been greeted with a more just a wall of sadness. I mean,
where was that?
They're like all over. They're these groovy okay. like, I mean, it's I might do it for myself when I turn 50, because it's the kind of thing. There's like clogging I think there's like clogging moonshine and fiddling. I mean, it basically sounds like heaven.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's funny because
do you want to come?
I would come. My dad is in a string band, has always been my whole life, and I remember once they came to my school and I was in fifth grade to play a square dance for the students.
Fantastic.
I was so fucking mortified.
Yeah,
it was the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I wish I could have appreciated that.
No, I know. It's one of those things that just falls into the category of, it's like quilting and like vistas. Like I talk about that in my show. Like there's a lot of stuff that just kicks in after 40 that you're like, let's stop and look at the vista. Like your children are like, fuck you.
Get back
it's
in the
tree.
Car. Yeah.
I can't imagine anything more boring than this mountain. Look, it's nature's paintbrush. I think that all bluegrass kind of falls into that category.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, but I was super raised on it too, because again, I grew up in Washington, D.C. So weirdly, for how much,
like D.C. proper?
Yeah, D.C. proper.
Okay.
But first of all, the public radio station in Washington, D.C., I don't know if it's still the case, all it plays in its non-news programming is bluegrass music. So it's like, it's incessantly on.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just constantly like, you know, you're just deluged. But and part of it was I grew up, you know, in the 70s, so it was sort of like after the Pete Seeger, you know, eclipse. But Yeah.
So, where's your family from? Like,
they're Midwestern, okay. And then they moved to DC and raised me. But yeah, so I think that I have a lot of bluegrass. Trauma, but also slash passion, like you said. So I'm going to go to swing dance camp for myself.
Do it.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you went to music school?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
After high school,
yeah.
I went to Northwestern as a music major.
Okay.
Like I sang my way into Northwestern.
Okay.
But like with an Italian art song, God help me. And then, and that's when it all sort of imploded on itself. I really wanted to be a theater major, but I didn't know how to say that. And
like say that to your family,
yeah,
to yourself?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. And also like double down in terms of the theater, like the sort of conventional theater, musical theater kids are all in the Midwest. So like when I showed up, I mm-hmm. really, it wasn't just like an arty Eastern theater program. It was like kids that were like working at Six Flags every summer and like auditioning for Disney and could all do a time step. And there was like the clean cut, like all the kids, like the leads in the Book of Mormon, like they were all at Northwestern,
yeah.
You know? So it was very intimidating, uh-huh. You know? And I was this kind of like, you know, frizzy haired girl with embroidered jeans from the East Coast. So to paint the full picture.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So then how did the switch happen?
I did shows and I think, you know, probably I didn't like my teacher is what it really came down to.
Really?
I think
music teacher?
Yeah, I think always like it comes down to as the professional in your life that's mentoring you. And I think I had uh-huh. kind of an old school, you know.
Vocal teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like leader song dud.
Uh-huh. What was the problem?
I don't even remember.
Okay.
And then there was, you know, I talk about it in my act, but, you know, there were a series of disastrous, you know, music school encounters, you know, various and sundry, just phenomenally bad fit moments. And I also okay. wasn't disciplined. I mean, I'm embarrassed by how, like, to this day, I can sight read, but I mean, I played the violin for like 14 years in orchestral level and then was a music major and I'm still terrible at theory. I never know what key I'm in. Like if someone goes, what key do you like? I'm like, oh. You know, I have to, it's embarrassing. And it's just like a blind spot, you
yeah.
know, like I don't think I'm bad at it. Is uh-huh. I just have never properly focused.
Okay.
Because the problem is when you're a soprano and a first violinist and you have a decent ear, you can fake anything. And I was a big time fudger.
Mm-hmm.
My husband calls me a Gryffindor, like in the Harry Potter speak.
Uh-huh.
He's like, you're such a Gryffindor. It's like, what does it mean? He's like, talented and lucky. Like,
and well, yeah, lazy. That's the magic combo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It is kind of, I was lazy about it. So, you know, now like with more of that, like the Broadway readings, you have to like really read and focus.
Yeah.
And I do like to challenge my brain that way, but, uh-huh. And I love the arrangement process. I love playing with, you know, when we're putting together a new song,
uh-huh.
How we want to do it. But I'm not good at the theory piece. I'm always sort of shaky on that.
Yeah. So were you also struggling in music school then because of that?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Block that out.
I was just like, I found the comedy people. Like, I was like, let's go, like, do bits. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, literally, like.
Did you start doing improv in college?
Yeah, yeah, like, right away.
Okay.
And found the funny. I mean, I was like, I found my people. Here we are.
You just knew it just clicked.
Yeah, like, in theater school, like, there's an appreciation for, you know, a fart noise. Like, people are just like, oh, that's what, you know, how did you do that? You know, it's a little more, it justifies the horse shit that I was doing a little bit more easily. Yeah. So
then, okay, so you were like, music, goodbye. Sorry, parents.
Dream stash. Thanks for the money.
Right. And then you went
out to... Sorry for all the Saturdays you had to drive me.
Exactly. And then, like, you went out to LA after that?
Yeah, then I went out to LA and I did the Groundlings.
Uh-huh.
And again, sang a little bit, like, song improv, just basic. But again, I thought it was over. Like, yeah. I didn't really ever take it seriously at all.
Right.
And
did you keep the violin with you?
Yeah, I had a couple of, like, phases, whatever. and then... Yeah, like, I took guitar. Like, SNL is so infantilizing because it's exactly like college.
Mm.
Like, you're there.
So it's arrested development that whole time.
Yeah, like, yeah. You're there freshman, you know, from September through May.
Right.
And then you have the summer off. And you can either, like, go on a personal project or, like, what'd you do for your summer vacation? Like, it's really, like, a very childlike setting.
Yeah.
And in some ways. And so I took guitar actually a couple summers, which was really fun.
In between seasons.
Yeah. And that's actually when I created this folk singer character that I did on a couple of the Lilith Fair tours that was on SNL. We wrote all these songs, these, like, overly concerned PC songs. Because I started playing guitar. Anyway, so it you know, there were moments, of course, and then Celine Dion, and then the music teachers, and then Gemini's Twin. And Maya Rudolph is so unbelievably naturally musical. I mean, I've never met anybody that musical. It's amazing to me because she could be a massive music star if she wanted to. And she also, you know, her dad, Dick Rudolph, wrote Loving You, and he's a major music producer. And her ear for arrangement is so good. It's insane. Like, again, she's totally unconscious of it, but we would be writing, you know, whatever, horseshit, stupid comedy songs, which we wrote all the time. And she could just, like, she understood just organically she's never had any musical training, like, how the bridge should work and what, you know, the ascent. And I mean, she's just a really natural songwriter. It's really interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah. So we did stuff together too, of course.
You never did, like, a comedy album, right?
No. Never did a comedy album.
I think you should do that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Can I put in a request?
What would you want on the album?
I don't, just like what Sandler did, but your stuff, I think you would be naturally suited for it. Just like goof songs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully one day, like, we sort of find our way into the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole complicated story that would be for another podcast. It's not this music podcast, but... Why did you leave SNL in the simplest terms that you can put it in?
Oh, I was done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing is, it's... I as a human being, I like to sow seeds in a lot of gardens.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
Like, were you thinking about getting back into music when you left?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd done some music theater. So I'd done the Rocky Horror Show on Broadway as a summer project, summertime stint.
Uh-huh.
And I really loved it. You know, I think that this isn't about music per se, but in terms, Saturday Night Live is all about pulling it off all the time. It's always, you know, it's Gryffindor.
Like, by the skin of your teeth.
Yeah, it's all by the skin of your teeth. It's all lucky breaks. It's all, like, pulling it out on Wednesday and getting it not fucking up. Like, it's sort of like the best that you've done is to not blow it.
Right.
And
how many seasons were you there?
Six.
Yeah.
And I think that I was like, I just was ready to kind of drill deep on something and get better at it and refine myself. And it's interesting because it's like the opposite of why I left music school. I suddenly was like, I want to practice and vocalize. And I threw myself in. And music theater in particular is the most disciplined in my experience of all. I mean, I've worked in film, television. I've even, you know, in straight plays and musical theater. And those people are beyond disciplined. I've never seen anything like it.
I don't know how you would have the energy in between seasons to go do a show.
It was
crazy,
really
impressive.
Fun. It was, like, intoxicating.
Yeah.
And again, I think the routine of it, I find really soothing. Mm-hmm. And what I love about working in a regular way in a show, particularly when it's up and running like that, the really brutal part about any musical theater is the development process and the previews, where you're rehearsing during the day and doing shows at night. It beats the shit out of your body.
Yeah.
I've never experienced fatigue like that. But when you hop onto somebody's existing treadmill, it is exactly like the treadmill. In fact, it's like you go about your business in the day and then you think, oh, I'm too tired to do the show. And then about 20 minutes in, something just kicks in and you're like, now I'm doing the show.
Yeah.
And it's so great to sing every day on that level and to sing, you know, again, Broadway musical theater singers are the best trained. Their ears are fantastic. Uh-huh. They take care of their voices. They're in great shape. You know, it's the discipline is staggering. And, you know, of course, I jump in feet first. I played Elphaba, was my first big thing. I mean, I did a lot of stuff before that. I did concerts and I did, you know, out of town and in town, because it takes a minute to prove to Broadway people that you're not just dialing it in, you know.
Right. So was that the first thing you did after SNL, was to go do Wicked?
No, I did... I did a bunch of straight plays, and I did a bunch of concerts. There's like these big all-star concerts of the Funny Girl revival and Hair. They revived, and then I did Funny Girl Out of Town. And I'm trying to remember. I mean, I had to sort of earn my stripes a little bit in the community.
Yeah. I was going to ask. I mean, did anyone in that community already know about this side of you, or you were able to parlay your SNL creds into like, hey, give me a shot?
People, you know, those people are all like Seth Rudetsky, my friend, who's like the sort of man about town of Broadway. It was the show Disaster that opened last night. He worked at the Rosie O'Donnell show. He was the music director, and he wasn't the music director. He just wrote a lot of music things. John McDee was.
John
so anyway,
Donald, yeah.
Yeah. So he was on actually Back to the Treadmill at the NBC gym. Like, he's got he's got perfect pitch and whatever. And he was like, oh my God, your sound was so beautiful on that open C at the top of Bobby and Martin. Like, I never know what I'm singing, you know, but he knew that the instrument was there, and
yeah,
a lot of real life music people knew that. But I don't think, you know, they still wanted to see me for the Lady in the Funny Hat, because every musical has that role.
Uh-huh.
And I was really interested in trying to sort of expand beyond it. And yeah. I knew I was a good fit for Elphaba, just type wise. Uh-huh. And I knew that the role was, she was kind of an outsider, and she was funny and she was witty. And they had actually seen me, they'd wanted to see me originally for the casting for Wicked when I was still on SNL. So, I mean, I was starting, wow. I was getting auditions and things as we were going.
So this was the first production of Wicked ever, right?
Yes. But what I ended up doing, that was my last season. So
yeah,
not a possibility.
Right.
So, what I ended up doing was going in when Idina Menzel left the show.
Okay.
So I went to, they auditioned three, I mean, they called back, or they auditioned lots of people, and then they ended up using her understudy, as often happens. Shoshana Bean went in, her standby, and then they called me 3 months later and said, we're going to start a production in Chicago and we want you to play Elphaba. So it was amazing, because it was like an original production and we had a proper rehearsal period, and it was soup to nuts, as opposed to getting plunked into somebody else's track, you know.
Was it scary?
Yeah, it's really as hard. It's as hard as SNL, but for theater. Like, it's the hardest. It's the hardest role to sing.
Yeah,
it makes no sense for anyone to be singing it 8 times a week. It's like a voice destroyer. But it really made me, you know, focus up, warm up, warm down.
Uh-huh.
I didn't drink coffee. I didn't drink alcohol. I ate, you know, protein at certain times. It was like being an athlete.
Yeah.
You just have to be so careful.
Totally.
And I learned so much about my voice as a result, you know. And there's nothing that can substitute for that. Like, I had a sinus infection, I can't hear anything, but I'm still singing the show. Like, all of those moments. And then I left and I went and I did the Three Penny Opera, which is Kurt Vile, which is totally different type of music, and it's very legit. And then I did Wicked Broadway. So it was kind of amazing, because I got this kind of sort of rapid fire, you know, 10,000 hour updo. Like,
yeah,
you know, I was able to catch up.
Uh-huh.
So, and it was all in a row. And in the meanwhile, I was working, I did my act before the one that I've done now, which I look back on, I'm like, oh my God, it was so hokey and bad. But it was just kind of like figuring it out. And I had sort of the bucket list of, like, a few people had actually approached me, frankly, to do kind of a vanity album or what have you, cabaret. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So I kind of, you know, stumbled around with that and did it here and there, and did it at Joe's Pub and did it in LA and whatever.
Yeah.
And started to really hone in on what I actually wanted. So what happened? So in terms of now, what happens when you work on Broadway is that people start calling you to sing publicly. Uh-huh. And so I would show up and I would, you know, me in a gown and a piano is like the weirdest fit and it's not right at all. So it's like what
Did you try it?
Yeah, I've done it a couple times and it's just awful. And A, it's not me. Uh-huh. And B, it's like, they'll be like, well, do some humorous musical theater music, which is, again, a nightmare because you're doing like somebody else, you know, it's like acting funny and just awkward and it's a whole different animal and it's not really me. Like, it's hard to say, explain, but I love music theater. I love portraying a role, uh-huh. but I don't like doing it outside of musical theater. It feels phony and phony. You know? So as I've developed my own act over the year, I just keep going back to the music that I really love, which is this sort of American songwriter, novelty jazz, I guess you would call it, ridiculous jazz, happy jazz, because I feel like it lives in a really authentic place for me. Uh-huh. Even though it's a bit of a boozy shtick, it's...
Because of the humor and the lightheartedness and the wordplay. And
all of that. Yeah. And then also, I just think jazz by nature, it's improvisational, you can play, it's very collaborative, it's interactive, which I'm an ensemble performer. The most fun thing about music for me is connecting with other people, and so the engagement of the band and everything that I do is really important.
Are you involved with the arrangements?
Yeah, I am. I mean, you know, I have to give huge credit to Julian Fleischer, who I work with, because he's got great ideas, and for sure, you know, is spearheading that, but I'm there for every second of the conversation, and we just fool around with something until we find a hook, until we find what makes us laugh about it. And I have to say, it's like, I hope that the record, it's not earnest, and it's not, I think there's nothing more annoying than listening to somebody prove that they can sing. And I tried to be very conscious of that as I did it, because the last, you know, if I can sing, it's great, and what a wonderful accident. But to set out to do that is unbecoming, and so I think.
But you don't want to be too modest, you know.
No, I
you
love
have a
good
voice.
I just don't want to, like, I guess it just doesn't take itself too seriously, and that's really important to me. Like every piece of music, I tend to be attracted to. I mean, as I'm developing, I'm looking more at, you know, really classic standard, you know. You know, I want to be around, but they tend to be like witty in and of themselves, I guess.
Yeah. Do you ever write songs?
I have in the, you know, back in the day in the SNL of it all, and I would like to do it. We're talking about Christmas music, and I have ideas for Christmas songs, of course.
Cool.
But,
how did this album come together?
I'm Hip came together exactly what I'm talking about. You know, that we continued to sit down and talk about songs that, it actually, the act to develop for the act came first. And what, and really wanting it to feel closer to who I am and less, I don't know, less earnest, I guess. Earnestness drives me nuts. It's all my favorite comedy, you know, is the NPR girls, all of that. Just like Martha Stewart. Anyone or anything that's taking itself too seriously tends to make me laugh.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, to find something that was loose and fun and collaborative and easy and just felt more close to who I am. And also, it is a little theatrical, and it is, you know, it is about sort of throwing a party and having people join and have a good time.
Right. So. Were you trying to find somebody who would make this album for you before you were like, I'm just going to do it myself?
Well, like I said, a few people had approached me.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation, was the last conversation about this record. Actually, somebody did approach me. And here's what happens usually now in the music. I mean, I'm not a professional necessarily. I don't consider myself like an expert on the music industry. But
I'm sure this hasn't only happened to you.
I had three producers call me up and say, hey, I want to produce your record. Based on your act, I love your act. So come and we'll talk about it. And we would go talk about it. And I would say, okay, great. So how do we pay for this? And they'd say, well, you raise the money. I'd be like, okay.
What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. And then Julian has amazing ears. I trust them inherently. He's produced four or five. He produced Kiki and Herb's records. I mean, he knows music. He's produced his own records. And he was like, look, why don't I just produce it? And then you get to own it all. Like, you know, you pay me for my studio time. And I trusted him. And I was like, yeah, why don't I just do that? I mean, it's money. It's more money initially out of your pocket. And believe me, at this point, if somebody came along and said, may I sell your record? But I also knew, well, your next one, I'd be like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But for the first one, I just felt like the other thing is in this conversation, which you're gracefully circling, you know, people saying, wait, are you a singer? Wait, are you a singer? It just makes life easier when you're like, yeah, yeah, I have a record, you know?
Yep.
And I knew, certainly from a touring and booking standpoint, it was a worthwhile investment, because just having a record, you know, makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
For sure.
So
that applies to so many things. Like just not waiting for someone to come green light you, but to just do it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not perfect because you're doing it yourself and you don't have all the resources you ideally would have.
Yeah.
Just to put something out there.
Yeah.
So then maybe people will want to help you more the next time because they see you could do it for yourself. You know,
I think that's really true.
Yeah.
And I think it's really scary. I think for years I put it off. I mean, like I said, there was a producer who came to me my last season of SNL. I was like, let's make a record. And I stalled and fucked around and pretended and said, oh, what would the show be? And just like, you know, you can do that forever because what if it's wrong?
Right.
But then I think I'd done my act enough.
But then so what if it's wrong?
I know.
Yeah.
It is scary because it feels permanent. But I was like, but I film things all the time and I'm so comfortable with them being terrible. So, like, who cares? You know, so that's, I think, what I'm the most proud of is I was the opposite. Like when we were actually recording, I was so, it was summertime. I would like ride my bike. We went out for drinks every night. Like it was like very easy and comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I knew the music well. And I.
Where were you recording? You just rent a studio in the city?
We recorded, I'm on the spot now. I can tell you. It was downtown. It was on Wall Street. And
it wasn't in your apartment.
No, it was a legitimate music studio. No, it was actually great because we were able to bring a really live feeling of, we didn't overdub all the instruments. The only overdubs we did were the horns.
Okay.
And then that was all one day just because it's cost effective. And then, it was very collaborative, we brought this amazing vibraphone player, Nick Mancini, in from LA, and he has such great ideas. And we wanted like a really late 50s, early 60s sound. We wanted to feel like we were in a room recording together, you know?
Cool.
And not going in and like auto-tuning and Frankensteining something, you know? And that wasn't just for cost purposes, but it was also just for the sense of the experience.
So, right. Like you're playing cocktail party and everyone's just hanging out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it feels that way when you listen to it.
So now the promoting of it was also completely on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing. I learned so much about everything, you know, and I had to produce I produced the video. It was really empowering in some ways because again, like I know amazing and talented people and they're willing to show up, which is amazing, you know, that Yorma wanted to do it. But that was like, we did the whole video for 5K and we were like, we did it in a day and it was so intoxicating because it was like being back in college, you know, we were like literally borrowing, like I boosted a trombone from my kid's school's music department, like because I know the music teacher. I was like, can you get me a trombone? He's like, yeah, meet me on the corner, you know, Clinton and whatever, like, so like handed me this trombone. It's like, you have to have it back by tomorrow because it's brass choir, you know, like, so we were doing things like that, like I got my neighbor's baby is in it. I literally called your mom. I was like, I got a baby, like it's like everybody did stuff for free. All my husband's friends from work came in all dressed up like they were at a party. Awesome. At 5 a.m you know, we had a great time.
Legit DIY
And it looks fantastic, and it was really, really, really fun.
Very cool.
Yeah. So so that part's, you know, still happening, obviously. That's why I'm sitting here with you.
But the Kate.
Yeah, so I was gonna say, so it's like a slow little, like, you know, I've been doing live shows and I've done a lot of live shows as a result. And these really nice people at the Kate in Connecticut called up, and it's such a great little venue. It's like this really hip little, I think it's a converted movie theater. It's just got this tiny but super stylish vibe, and they really like lady singers, and I mean the lineup was like super impressive. I couldn't believe that they
So wait, is this an ongoing series they have there, and then they just filmed particular performances?
There are series for PBS, is my understanding, that they do. They have a series live at the Kate that goes out to their PBS affiliates and to their streaming service. And and Ricky Lee Jones is on this season, and Nancy Wilson. No, not Nancy Wilson.
Anne Hart.
Anne Hart.
Anne Hart.
Let's say Nancy Wilson too. Why not? Sounds good.
Maybe eventually. And you're the first one. You're the first,
one.
Performance.
Yeah. Shockingly.
Kicking it off.
Kicking it off. That's right. In my gold dress.
Yeah. No, it's cool. How did they describe it? As bold performers with something to say, like Katharine Hepburn, which is who it's named after.
Correct.
Yeah. So what do you have to say? How do you fall into that if you had to pitch yourself that way?
I mean, I do think I approach an evening as not just a like musical experience. Like, I think the whole package is important to me.
Yeah.
I want people to have fun. I'm a hostess all the time in real life. I love having parties. I want people to feel like they've had a brain vacation when they come to my show. So I want them to hear songs that engage them, that are ridiculous and fun and make them laugh and just take them out of the sort of seriousness and incredible depression of life. I'm not sure if that's something strong to say, but it's where I stand on the world, you know? And so...
It's needed.
It is needed, and it is throwbacky. You know, it's. I mean, I'm me, so I'm going to talk about things that are current and relevant in my life, but I think it's about a kind of a connected live experience that's ridiculous and fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean you have to drink. You can be sober and you can have a mocktail. And but you know, like if you have that scent, I think that's what I like, is sort of the umbrella in the drink of life.
Yeah.
You know? And
and you're good at that banter, which people can really bomb at.
I think it's not natural for a lot of performers. Yeah. You know, I think it's sort of unfortunately shoehorned onto them, and that's a really uncomfortable place, and I feel bad for them. You know, I mean, Celine Dion, like I watched her like read joke from, you know, prompter, and everybody does that. A lot of people do that, you know. But it's been really, that's where I'm very comfortable there. And again, it's been very good for me to kind of settle in to the ease, you know, the if you think about like Sarah Vaughan or like any of those, like Dean Martin, I mean, you know, those performers were expected to have a wit about them, and they consider themselves entertainers. And I think that's where it feels very throwbacky. And it took me a long time to sort of put on a party dress and do that. My management was always mad at me for not getting dressed up and stuff. But I feel like it, it's what people, it helps them understand and contextualize, like, this is an evening out, and I'll tell you a couple jokes, and even if you don't like them, it's fine. Like, we're just here to have a good time, and you want to get up and have a drink, that's fine. You want to take a picture of me while we're doing this? I'm not going to be mad at you. You know, like, I like that idea. I like that it's kind of a glorified anniversary party.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does. And I think then, in the audience, you feel like that performer is present and not just going through the motions, you know? That's a way of like checking in and connecting with the audience that I think is very much appreciated on their end.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the worst feeling for me. And I know it's hard for performers, and maybe it puts some unnecessary pressure on them to engage the audience in that way when maybe their job is just to play their music. But I know it can be frustrating if you feel like they just show up and they go through the set list and they're off. Because you want to feel like, I don't know, like that night is special for them, like it is for you or
and
something.
We were,
like,
I know,
sharing something, you know?
Totally. And I do, I mean, not to be too like Pollyanna about the whole thing, but it's funny, we went to this very hip show at the McKittrick Hotel. It's like very hip friend of ours is music manager, and very hip, two really hip bands that are super in right now. And I was laughing so hard with my husband because they came on stage exactly as you described, no fanfare, no announcement, and just like started jamming and, you know, and looked down the entire time, never addressed the audience, just played. And they're like, yo, no, he's notoriously shy. And it's like all this mystique. And I was laughing because I was like, I literally couldn't be more different than this. I'm so much needier. I am so much sweatier. I want people to like me. I want to like them. Like there's this engagement that is so different. Like they're like, I want a big fat announcement and some applause when I come out. You know, and I'm okay with that. Like I've sort of reached this age where the same thing is true. Like you meet these people that are like, you know, all the time in my business, like I don't own a TV, you know, this person. And my husband is so great because he finally was like, oh, why? TV's so fun. We watch it all the time.
You don't get bonus
There's
points
so
for that.
There's so many good shows that you're missing. Like, don't justify it. Like, that. So I'm sort of at this point, like I don't know what that word means. What does that word mean? You know, like, you know, like, it's easier just to sort of be out in front of it rather than feel like the jackass that I am.
So are you regularly playing?
Yeah. So I've been, what I was going to say, I'm meandering, I apologize, but
no, it's fine.
I'm actually playing this Saturday, but at Pace University. But yes, I've been out with the record because again, cart horse got all confused by my producing myself. But I signed with a very a wonderful booking agent after the record came out. So we've been basically out and about with the record for the last year and a half. And what I do love, again, I think you can get so isolated in your cool problem with LA and New York, and this month I was in Memphis and Tallahassee and, Baton Rouge. And I mean, we've been everywhere, Detroit, Kansas, Iowa, and audiences are so, each time I go with this, like, not a snob attitude, but I'm always like, oh, well, this is where they're going to hate me. Yeah. You know, each
let's see how this goes badly. Yeah,
totally. And
are you playing jazz clubs or what kind of venues?
I'm playing like small PACs, I guess is what you would call them, and some jazz clubs. Yeah, yeah. And again, I would love to be playing more and more jazz clubs, but you know that to get booked into these series, like, you end up playing these more of a formal theatery kind of a vibe, which again, whatever. But some of them are more supper clubby, and some of them are like, you know, we're trying something new.
Yeah.
Usually like an adjunct to a bigger PAC, they'll have like a smaller, more intimate, you know, large cabaret style venue, I guess you'd call it, where people can drink. I like people to drink is the important message here. But yeah, I mean, the main thing is that I forgot what I was saying, but it's ended up being very illuminating and really fun. Like you said, like, to connect with audiences in cool places, you know?
Yeah. Do you find a lot of people are coming out because they know you from SNL?
They do come out.
And then
out.
They're like pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's actually the win. Yes, I do find that, of course. I mean, that's also where this music luckily protects me somewhat. And it used to drive Julian crazy, but I'd be like, we have to address the comedy. Like, they just expect it.
Yeah.
And if it's not funny out of the gate, they're going to be really sad. and
it was all a lie. Yeah.
Well, I still think, you know, we have to market it really carefully so people don't think like Anna Gasteyer and her funny wig show.
Right,
you know?
Variety show kind of thing. Yeah.
But even still, in fact, the last venue I did, the sign said the Anna Gasteyer variety show, and I had a heart attack. Because I was like, oh my God, they're going to think like I'm going to tap. I don't know what they're going to think. But it was one of my best crowds. So it just goes to show you, like, and again, it just has to do with the demographic, but, I usually hit it on head first, you know, like, I went to music school. This is why I'm here.
Totally.
Need you to know, if in case you're concerned, but I think they are pleasantly surprised because again, a lot of the music lives in the fun place. And so it's not like a horrible evening of watching somebody sing, I don't know, you know, Porgy and Bess or something that you're like, what? Happened
yet?
yes. No, literally, I had a musical director. I remember when we were working on it, like thinking towards this act. He was like, "You should do an evening of Kurt Vile." And I had a moment. That's actually when I was like, "No, I'm never going to perform musical theater. It's not going to happen." I mean, Kurt Vile's like classical, but you know, it's like,
yeah. I think on your episode of The Kate, you say like there are two Anna Gasteyers, but it sounds like they're not so separate.
In this album and in this incarnation, they're not so separate. They feel like they live in the middle of me, which is, it feels very true to myself in a really fun, satisfying way. And I didn't really know that going into it.
Yeah.
I knew certain things. Like every time I picked a song for the first, you know, 2 years of developing this act, the question always, you know, when you're writing a screenplay or whatever, you have like one word and you keep going back to that word. It's a very helpful tool, like a little flashcard. And my flashcard was, honestly, humor, which is a gross word, which I hate, but like, does the song resonate in any way to not take itself too seriously? Does it have a sense of humor about itself?
Right.
So no matter what that is, you know,
just to give people an understanding of what you're talking about, can you just mention like one song that's emblematic of that you perform?
Well, I mean, my opening song, which I have been trying to replace for 3 years because I sing it so much. But I love it. The song One Mint Julep, mm-hmm. you know, which is this old Ray Charles song. And it's really just a tale of a woman who accidentally got too drunk and ended up with a family, you know, like ended up having to marry this guy because she just like went for One Mint Julep and now look at her.
Yeah.
And so it has like this kind of irreverent whoops quality to it. It's fun. It's up tempo. It's jazzy, you know. It's, you know, we're listening. We were inspired by this Quincy Jones arrangement, which is just insane. But, you know, it's got lots of horns and
yeah.
it's big and it's brassy and sassy and, you know. so certainly like that. But then like in terms of ballads, like mm-hmm. The Book of Love, which is this Magnetic Field song, which is beautiful.
That's a gorgeous cover that you do of that song, by the way. I had completely forgotten that song existed.
Wow, thank
you.
And
I heard it this week and I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, wait, what version of this do I remember? And I was going back through and I mean, not just trying to flatter you. Your version is my favorite version.
That's so nice.
So check it out, guys. Yeah. No, it's gorgeous.
Thank you. Well, that song, again, has like a... it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Like, it's a song you would want at your wedding. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it does not take itself too seriously. It doesn't take love too seriously.
Yeah.
It asks some pretty funny questions about love. It's very simple, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the same thing, like... We do a cover of the Valley of the Dolls theme, mm-hmm. which, you know, again, like you think like campy gay, you know, anthem.
Yeah.
And obviously I have a very large gay demographic in terms of who I perform for a lot. Uh-huh. But at the same time, the song is insanely beautiful. And Dori Previn is a genius. I actually just bought 2 vinyls of Dori Previn for my daughter yesterday. Uh-huh. And because I was going to this disaster opening, so I was looking for old 70s covers. I bought Barry Manilow Live for my friend who's in the show, right?
Uh-huh.
And there were 2 Dori Previn albums there, and I just picked them up, and my daughter, like all retro 13-year-olds, she got a turntable for Christmas. So
naturally.
So it was so funny because she texted me in the middle of the night. She's like, did you mean these to leave these for me? These are amazing. Like, she's such a clever songwriter.
That's cool.
And she's so smart, and she's such a feminist and so ahead of her time.
Uh-huh.
And she's sort of like a Kristen Wiig character in appearance, but such a genius, like genius. So,
yeah.
You know, so it's kind of cool. Like, so she had a great wit about her, you know, and strength.
Right.
So as much as you're like, ha ha, like listen to the Valley of the Dolls song, like it's also sort of brilliant and funny all at the same time.
Well, that's that middle that you're describing. It's like finding the beauty in the comedy or vice versa, finding the funny stuff in the pretty songs.
Yeah, but I always had to say to myself, like, is this earnest? And if it is, it doesn't make the list.
Yeah.
This doesn't make the cut.
Axed.
Yep.
Yep.
And we cut lots of things over the way.
Yeah.
And we have lots of fun things that, like, there's a song called the Doodlin' Song, which Rosemary Clooney, a bunch of people recorded. It's ridiculous. They've done it in commercials.
Okay.
It's really silly, Cy Coleman, whatever. And we actually laid down the track for it. And I have been trying desperately for 5 years to find the hook on this song. Like, what is the thing that is going to make me love this? Like, do I just like regale people with my story of my, you know, I don't know, HPV warts, like against this I don't know, like what is the story? Like, or is that a little on the nose,
uh-huh,
so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of but again, that was such a fun, happy song. Like, all I want to know is like, or do I have somebody like drop a beat? Like at one point I was like, do I hire a rapper?
Oh,
like,
God.
You know what I mean? Like, what is it against the doodling
song? But it's like
song?
A challenge that you want to figure out.
It's a nut I have to crack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also has that old radio show feeling too, that song of like, oh, look who's coming in.
Yeah.
Well, hello, Maya Rudolph. Whatever it is.
Yeah. So maybe for the next album.
Maybe for the next album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there one in the works?
There's like 3. And I again have to come up with a year of college tuition for one of my children to pull it out. But the first is the first and most relevant is that we're definitely talking Christmas.
Cool.
Again, I think this style lends itself, you know, to drunkards at Christmas.
Yeah.
And I did, we've worked a bunch of charts up that are ridiculous. And Christmas music is kind of a gimme in terms of funny and...
Right. So I'm guessing less like Little Drummer Boy and more... Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Yeah, again, this is like always the challenge, right? Do you want comedy Christmas songs or do you want like your, you know, there's some crazy versions of like Jingle Bells out there. Mm-hmm. Or there's a song called Jingling by the Andrew Sisters, which I'm jing, jingling, jingling, jingling. Ha ha, ho ho, Christmas time is here. Like, right. Jing, jingling, 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 ding, 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 ding. Thank you for laughing.
That's awesome. So the lyrics don't have to be funny.
I think it just has to be joyful and outrageous. I mean, like, and again, Ted Firth, who I play with a lot and uh-huh. also has worked a lot on these arrangements. We did six for a show that I did deliberately at Christmas time to try to put them in front of an audience and see how they felt. One is a multi-octave version of The Grinch, which everybody loves that song.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard a lot of girls sing it, so true. It's like one of those. But yeah, I mean, cool. It's a little, again, you have to see, like, make sure, anyway, songs are interesting. But, you know, the trick with some, oddly enough, a lot of the Christmas music we regularly listen to is not that good from a songwriting standpoint. It's
uh-huh.
boring.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's about finding songs that are actually tuneful and unique and mm-hmm. Not just familiar, and then kind of finding the line in between that, because definitely on a Christmas record, you want songs that you know too.
Yes.
Because it's Christmas, you know?
Right.
So it's like finding that. Yeah.
All right. So 2016, the year of a potential Christmas album.
I'm really hoping that happens this year. And then after that, we were just literally exchanging texts as I walked in, uh-huh. Just working up new material and baking it into the tour dates so that I can see if things work. I am getting accidentally more serious just because I tend to love songs. Uh-huh. And so then I'm not so anxious about proving everything to everyone all the time anymore. So there
thank
are
God for that.
Thank
that
you.
Must feel good.
It does. I mean, it's unconscious, but yeah. So, there are songs, that I'm developing that are a little more, in the realm of just good songs, you know.
Yeah.
We're working on a version of Satan's Little Lamb. I mean, you know, just some great jazz standards that are great to sing and perform.
Right. So is the acting taking a back seat right now to the music?
No, luckily I've been I'm working in television a lot, so not in any ways that apparently anyone knows about, but I have a series.
I'm asking so you can tell us.
Oh, thank you so much. No, I have a role on this really fantastic Netflix series called Lady Dynamite that do you know the comic Maria Bamford?
Mm-hmm.
That she's a genius, and she's created about her own experience with her bipolar diagnosis, and it's possibly the most fun thing I've ever worked on, and which is saying something. And that premieres or drops on Netflix for your binging pleasure,
uh-huh.
May 20th. So that all comes out. So we did that
amazing.
All last summer, and I play the biggest cunt agent in the world.
Yes,
she's
her agent.
Such an asshole. Yeah, it's the most fun I've ever had, and there's no other way to describe this woman as the meanest woman on the planet. It's so fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then I'm doing a series for TBS this year as well called People of Earth that has been picked up to series, but we haven't shot yet. So we shot the pilot, but we haven't. It's about survivors of alien abduction.
Okay.
It's a half hour comedy.
Naturally.
So
you're busy. You got stuff going on.
Yeah. So it's, I want to pocket in this. The music is, you know, keeps, I'm so grateful, just grateful that people want to come out and hear it. Grateful that I get to tour, you know, grateful. It sounds bullshitty, but I feel like
it's okay to be earnest sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's I'm lucky because I feel like that live thing keeps you growing all the time and challenges you. And it's terrifying. I mean, there's as much as glib and as comfortable as I am, like it's the thing you were talking about getting up and doing it. Every time I do a live show, I'm like, oh, here we go. Like it's all me and it's all me, like getting the band on the phone and getting them to show up and rehearsing, and you have to be like a grown up, you know, and then deliver, you mm-hmm. know, and it's impossible for me anyway to phone in a live show. Like, I don't know. That's just impossible.
God, you just feel so shitty afterwards, I think, because you know it.
I don't think it's possible in this capacity. Like maybe if I were a big recording artist and that's where I was most comfortable was mm-hmm. in the studio. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, it's audience first, you know?
Yeah. That's a nice policy.
Yeah.
All right. So your episode of The Kate will be available for streaming on March 19th.
March 19th. And then I believe it also shows on your local PBS station as well. So
voila.
Streaming The Kate PBS.tv. You'll be able to watch each episode weekly.
Or if you're a PBS person, tune in to your local PBS channel. And there she will be.
PBS, it's not just for old people.
Exactly. Neither is NPR.
No, it's not, but...
we're reclaiming all of them.
NPR feels a little less Geritol commercial-ish.
It is, especially now that they've really grasped onto the podcasting thing.
Yeah.
I think that has expanded their world.
Yeah, they seem to be ahead of that.
Yeah.
PBS is still a little bit stuck in the, live from the pops.
Right. But, you know, the fact that this show is streaming simultaneously is pretty cool.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
I'm really psyched that they let me do it. And I hope that your listeners will come to a theater near them to see me.
There you go. Check her out, guys. All right, Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome New England's handsomest performer, the Mistress of Moxie, 29-time crossword puzzle clue, Anna Gesteyer!
Cause of it all, I don't remember just how it started, but all I know is we stole a kiss and then another. I didn't mean to. One man you left, it was a cause of it all. Ooh, the lights were burning low there in that tavern. Went through the swinging door, in walks my father. He said, I saw you when you kissed my daughter.
Hell no!
Oh, 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 I didn't know just what we were doing. We up and married. A mint julep, a mint julep, a mint julep. One mint julep, it was the cause of it all.
Hey!
Just a little slash of soda.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.